ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Look at my butt. Now look at my front butt.
Wada, 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 wada.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Blood chamber pressure increases. It's full.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
And welcome to KSDAD Radio. Tonight is going to be two short movies, one in real time and one in movie time. And happy Women's History Month. We want to talk about a woman that, wouldn't you say, Carl, that whenever women's history and filmmaking is brought up, pretty much got dang well ignored.
Well, it's funny. Ida Lupino is not as well known as some of the more, like Catherine Bigelow and the newer directors, but she's really one of the first female directors that are out there. I think we were talking earlier. We were talking earlier today about Leni Riefenstahl, but as far as American, she's the first American female director, and she did most of her work in the late 40s and mid-50s in films, and then went to television, and she has many, many accolades, and we definitely need, this is a good way of spotlighting what she can do, both as an actress and a director.
If you want to understand why most movie shows in history nowadays sort of ignore Leni Riefenstahl, watch the documentary, The Wonderful, Horrible Life of Leni Riefenstahl.
Agreed. Agreed. Great documentary on her.
But we're doing two tonight, and can we talk about how much the real directors that we love from back in the 40s in the film noir days? Mm-hmm. Film noirs, if you see an RKO radio picture before a film noir, that is a sign of goodness.
Mm-hmm. And needless to say, this movie that we're going to start with, The Hitchhiker, was the first film noir classic in the classic era that was directed by a woman. So there you go. She's got an accolade right there. Ida Lupino.
And one of the first noirs to be told, well, we'll get into that when the movie is done. But first, I want to thank Tracy Johnson and the one and only mistress of sci-fi, all hell, wherever she walks, Vicki Love, for coming on last night. And Vicki Love for just basically preaching like a southern preacher on the good and the bad of Dune 2.
And also Spaceman, right?
Yeah, and Spaceman. And with that, go to YouTube and look up Ida Lupino film noirs for the two we're going to watch tonight. And the first one, get The Hitchhiker geared up to chapter 1000.
And that's The Hitchhiker with Hitch-Hiker, 1953 film noir.
Yeah. And I've always wanted to do this for Film Noir Month, do Isla Pinot Noirs, but it just never caught up, and now we've caught up with it.
Absolutely.
And get it on 000, and here we go. And since I'm being generous, I'll let you do the countdown tonight, Carl.
Oh, well, thank you very, very much. Okay. We'll go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, then go, and we start on go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
This is a sign of goodness. One of the greatest monster pictures out of the 30s, RKO. Some of the best horror films. Oh, this is a true story of a man and a gun in a car. This whole movie is in real time. And that is a mother budger to film right. And who are the filmmakers, Carl?
Well, that would be Ida Lupino's production company. Okay, and I can tell you momentarily.
And he's in the next film we're watching, too.
Mm-hmm. So just a second. I'll give you this in a second. Okay.
In one of the first film noirs written by a woman, number notch on the belt.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it was her and her then-husband, Collier Young, formed this independent company, the Filmmakers, Inc., to produce, direct, and write low-budget, issue-oriented films. And 48, Lupino was vice president, Collier Young as president, and screenwriter Melvin Wold as treasurer. And they produced 12 feature films.
See, this movie don't fuck around, not even... 30
no.
seconds in, we already got a double murder in it.
Yeah.
Produced by Collier Young, as you said, and directed by Ida Lupino.
Yeah.
We could spend the whole 70 minutes just talking about RKO and Monogram directors that left the studio so they could make films like this.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, we could do a whole show on that. Can you imagine how shocking that was to show people back then the two dead bodies like that?
Again, look how it's directed with the sense of darkness and that sort of thing. You don't know who it is.
Well, actually, you showed the face right there.
Yeah, right there.
And here's where 90% of the movie takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, probably more like 96, 97, but hey.
Yeah.
Why do you think, Carl, that Ida Lupino was so into claustrophobic type films when it comes to being a director?
Well, one of the things about her, you know, not just being claustrophobic, and in terms of this particular film, she certainly is. You know, also, that's more... noticeable in her television work, particularly for like Thriller and Twilight Zone and such. But this particular film was cited in terms of where in film noir was always the femme fatale that was the agent. In this case, she flips it. It's the male. It's the female that
let's not forget, as in the other film, these two guys are misogynistic pieces of shit who are leaving their wife at home so they can run off and fly with a Mexican blackbird. Look up the definition. That may be one of the dirtiest things they ever said on the show, wouldn't you say, Carl?
Yep.
And I love it. They're not giving these guys any sympathetic beats.
No, not at all.
Hey, let's go down there and get some tacos. Look for some fish tacos, Holmes. We're going to get us some heat.
Absolutely. I want you there with me because you'll get me good food.
Look at this rear projection here.
Yep.
That's me and you in Mexico. Hey, Carl. Carl. That was a ballsy shot. If she wanted it for, she wanted you to mistake what you thought he was doing at the very first of it.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to God, it looked like he was taking a leak there for the first 3 seconds till you seen the light. What do you think?
Yep.
And look, they got him in shadows in the back. They're in light. He's in dark. Wasn't that like a film noir trope?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Noir, particularly classic noir.
Shut up. Put your arms up.
Shadows.
Shut up and put your arms up. Motherfucker got a gun on us. Now, that's a hell of an introduction, isn't it?
Yep.
But did he say the word that I thought he said?
I'm not sure.
Condoms?
Yeah, he just said.
Holy crap.
I'm a little behind you because I have to deal with commercials.
Yeah, me too. But still, holy freaking crap. A 1950 film that uses the C word.
Yep. This is what she did.
I know.
We're going to open Trump. Move.
For a second, this reminded me of Deliverance.
Yeah. You don't think you're going to hear squeal like a pig, though.
I love that. I love that. You'll never make it. Bless her, she just broke the gun rule, Carl.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she did.
And what that is if you see a rifle at the first of a movie, it would definitely be involved in action and be forgotten about.
Right.
Not there. My name was yours. He's probably getting off work from garage. I just want to say this, as in, this motherfucker has one of the cleanest goddamn outfits I've seen for someone that had just gotten off from working at a garage.
No.
See, they're already feeling guilty for lying to their wives. Now their wives won't be able to find them. Why?
Mm-hmm.
They think they're here east, and they're going west.
So one of the things that is interesting about this, and we can also talk about a film called Detour, which we both love, is that they're intimate, small stories. You've got basically three characters here. That's what you got. And I just have another commercial so everyone knows.
Yeah, and if you notice, outside of them showing the car driving, it is all green screen inside the car.
Mm-hmm.
Or would they call it rear-end projection back then?
Mm-hmm.
Well, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine how cheap it was to make this movie?
Yeah, that, now the general, the budgets, particularly on these films, were between $50,000 and $100,000. Some of them were a lot less.
I doubt this cost anywhere near $50,000.
A lot of that would be publicity. I'm not talking shooting. Particularly. I'm going to take a look at that right now.
RKO didn't work in publicity because they didn't have to because their name was pre-sold. This motherfucker loves the side roads.
Yeah.
Pardon my friend.
doesn't give me anything on that.
Do you already have the feeling of being stuck in the car and them of smelling the sweat, the desperation, the pure guilt?
Uh-huh.
You know, everything he says to them makes them feel guilty. It's like, you know. Did you ever watch that movie Promising Young Woman?
I know of it, but I've never seen it.
Well, it's like that. Before she kills the guy that did the deed, she basically, run! I mean, if you really think about it, this guy could be the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Punishing these guys for their sin. Because this is another example of Hitch, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What is it about the hitchhiker character that really have been prevalent in movie history all the way from the dawn of the movies till nowadays?
Well, okay, so if you are driving and you pick up a hitchhiker, you're picking up the unknown. You don't know.
I mean, this even goes back to the urban legend about the guy picking up the girl outside of the cemetery and having a good evening. And then he finds, There is so much mythos involved with the hitchhiker character.
Mm-hmm. They even had a series called The Hitchhiker. Remember?
Yeah.
The horror.
Well, actually, if you watch it, it was a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't no Tales from the Crypt style horror. And California with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
The Hitcher with
Rutger Hauer.
And what's I can't think of the movie's title, but all I can think about is if this is what you want, this is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this would fit in this movie. That song would fit in this movie too, wouldn't it? Richard Stanley is sort of obsessed with Hitch, isn't he?
Oh, Dust Devil.
Even the color out of space has hints and throwbacks to the Hitch mythos.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one is at the very end of the movie. One of the characters is using the, what do they call that thing? You use it to trace north, south, east, and west.
Compass.
Oh, yeah, compass.
Mm-hmm.
See, now we're seeing him start to get nervous. Hold that. That's impossible. How the hell can you get from Florida to Oregon to, well, to California in one pooping day?
Particularly back in the '50s, because they didn't. Yeah, they didn't go as fast.
Well, that's good old Route 6. This is the first. Oh, did you just see that line?
Mm-hmm.
The Dale hits a ride. Is there any quote, anything quoting to any mythos about a William Johnson?
Not William. You're talking the Crossroads, Robert Johnson, right?
Yeah. I went down to the crossroads, got down on my knees. And right
nice
now, with
you.
That line that he said before I interrupted, you've got the sweat smell in your nose right now of them driving for a whole day in 100-degree plus heat and how funky they must smell.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably a little bit of Carol Chessman too.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are going to die, that's all. Just a question of when. Santa Rosalia? That's the end of the line. If the cops find out where to get it, or if you try to cross me up.
You guys are going to die, that's all.
So just to give you an idea, you got Edmund O'Brien.
You make pretty good targets.
Hold on, I'll give it all to you.
No, I don't even want to take the tip.
But I'm
stay close.
Edmund O'Brien is Roy Collins. Frank Lovejoy is Gilbert. And William Talman is Emmett.
And like I said, that's a bit from... Carl, do you recognize where that's from? The one eye
I'm behind you, so I don't know what you're referring to.
I love the old man.
Well,
with his
oh, yeah,
eye,
okay.
The telltale heart.
Yep.
Ooh, I bet they smell as funky as a monkey. Hey, it's the place from the getaway they never talked about. Ha, 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 ha. Right, Carl?
Right.
I'll
tell you how much you pay. Is that clear? One other
thing. I'm going to have my hand in my pocket. So far, my record in Mexico is clean. I want to keep it that way. Let's go.
Ellen, Carl, get your hand out your pocket. Damn. This is a family show. Even though we're selling vinos and licoros, refrescos. You mind if I get one of those hats, Carl? Hey, no, I got the one. Third row down. You see me wear it before in pictures?
Yeah, yeah.
Some beans and stuff. And tomato soup, I like that. I kept four cans.
He wants four cans of beans, four cans of tomato soup, three cans of chili.
Take the cans off the shelf. Just give him a call.
Carl. Would you buy four cans of beans and four cans of chili?
Yikes.
I would buy four cans of beans and buy some of those chiles off the walls. Probably make better chili. I'm at the part where they're in the store still.
Put the kid down. Let's get out of here.
Okay, I think I'm with you.
Which I like it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I wouldn't buy no damn chili. I would buy the beans and get some of them chiles off the wall. You know, those ones hanging on there. Wouldn't you say I mean, baby, make a better damn pot of bowl of chili than any damn can of chili?
Hey,
mister. I'll be there sometime. Nice place, huh? Hey, Carl. You live in that city called El Mimpe still? I've been there sometimes. It's a nice place.
Good. Find me a cerveza.
Why? You get good tequila and good wine in Mexico better than any fucking beer you get.
Give me a Negro Modelo anytime. And I'm not a tequila person.
Ooh, I can smell the stink in that car. And they got beans. A lot of beans. God dang. That's one of the first rules of a road trip, ain't it, Carl? Don't eat beans when you're going to be close in the car to somebody.
Did you hear me? I told you to throw it over here.
I love how he's making him feel guilty with just little things. You know. Where'd you get this? Where'd you get that watch, Carl? Boom.
I had a watch like this once when I was 17.
Oh,
he gave it. I took it. I got the talking down jewelry store and a little shirt down on that. With a cinch.
Living on Tulsa time.
You know, at least for that one. You're up to your necks in IOUs. You suckers. You're scared to get out of your own home. You're
good to yourself. Well, not me. Nobody ever gave me anything. So I don't know.
I'm sorry, I just love his speech, don't you?
Good thing. Absolutely.
What?
She's yeah. very tight with her camera work. There's reaction shots. No, just really well done. Lighting, the lighting is superb.
Yeah.
Just enough.
And I love the killer. The killer seems more sympathetic in a way than those two dickheads.
Yeah.
You fart.
I certainly did.
Yeah.
Hey, at least now the car smells better.
Turn it up. You like to hear what's going on. You just get the grub ready. Anything interesting, I'll let you know.
Another commercial.
What are we trying to put that radio out of commission?
Do not fucking mention the commercial. Just keep filler, filler, filler. Shush. It's amazing to me how much of a man, as you mentioned a little bit, but how much of a manly touch he has to this film.
He came to Mexico.
He found out the cat and cat bird. Don't you love how judgmental he is? Never call, get your fucking hands off the horn. Why did I install a horn in your damn seat if you're going to pull this shit? Carl.
What?
Turn off your damn horn. Or is the fart really that long?
I'm behind you. I don't even get the reference.
Man, forget it.
I'm like a minute behind you.
We're going to move on to something else, okay? Look up something short and ugly like me. Sorry about this, but YouTube and its commercials have decided to screw us. Carl, turn the movie off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I
the commercials have screwed us. Sorry. Sorry, everybody. We're used to this, but that doesn't mean we like it. Go to Criterion.
Okay.
We'll talk about Ida Lupino too. And look up the movie that is a misspelling of Au revoir Los Enfants.
Okay, give me the English title.
Reservoir Dogs. What? What'd you say?
There it is. I got it.
Yeah. We're going to skip to this because, like I said, Criterion has no commercials. And, God damn it, we want a noir.
There you go.
And we're on zero. And start in on Criterion or anywhere. If you got Reservoir Dogs on DVD, set it up at 000. And here we go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, go.
This movie,
Reservoir Dogs was made as a cheap film. Oh, who's that guy in association with the big producers? We'll get into that and the guy there. But this movie was made as a direct-to-video throwaway. They was trying to get product in the video stores.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came and kicked ass in there. And who is the guy with the fan behind his head, Carl?
Well, we've got lots of people here.
Yeah, but the guy sitting next to Steve Buscemi on the left. There we go. Who is that?
I'm not sure who that is.
Eddie Bunker.
Oh, that's Eddie Bunker. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason this movie got out the way it did was because of one, him, Tim Roth, and who's this Monty Hellman guy that was helped produce this and get the money?
Well, Monty Hellman is an American film director, started working with Roger Corman and made some of the most interesting films for Corman, many of which didn't really make any money, including Cockfighter. But best known for Two Lane Blacktop. Also, he directed two great westerns, Ride the Whirlwind and The Shooting, which were the
which
American equivalent of...
as a great double feature set on Criterion.
Right. And those are the American... answer to spaghetti westerns. And one of them starred, the one starred Warren Oates and the other one starred Jack Nicholson.
Well, Nicholson
and
was
one of
in
my
both
favorite
of them.
Directors. And there's Lawrence Tierney, goddammit.
Yeah, Lawrence Tierney. Tim Roth.
Harvey Keitel.
What would you do if you didn't know anything back about this then, and you just seen this title, Reservoir Dogs, in the video store?
Mm-hmm.
Carl, like I said, what would you do if you just seen this in the video store with just that title? You know, would you rent it? Without any word, good or bad?
Well, you know, they would have the cast, and I'd see Harvey Keitel, and I'd say, yeah, that could be interesting. Steve Buscemi.
But this movie blew up shockingly, bigger than they ever expected it to be.
And the guy in blue is Chris Penn, is Sean Penn's brother.
Yeah, and the guy talking about Madonna's big dick is Quentin Tarantino himself.
Yep.
I just think it's cool that they got... Well, this is pretty much a love note to Eddie Bunker. So, of course, he wanted to get Eddie Bunker in the film.
Yep.
And with Florence Tierney, you got to go way back in the 50s. What is that one, Asphalt Jungle with John Huston?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Madsen? All right, everybody
come up. Did you notice that? Who ratted him out? Wait, we're going to... Here comes Steve Buscemi's first speech and made him stand out from the pack. Right?
Right.
Give me that. She'll make enough money she can quit. I don't even know if fucking Jew would have the balls to say that. Let me just get this straight. You don't like the tip? I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves it.
There's a tip.
As far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their job. Hey, this girl was nice. She was okay. She wasn't anything special. What's special?
Keeping
the back inside your dick.
I just love the way that Ed said that. But yeah, the original title of this is when he worked in the video store, some idiot that worked there put Olive Wah Les Enfants by Truffaut as Reservoir Dogs. And let's get the elephant out of the way real quick. Carl, what movie was this pretty much a script ripoff of?
Ring of Lamb, right?
Ringo Land, City on Fire. But
City
the thing
fire.
Is...
I couldn't remember the title, but yeah, City on Fire.
The thing is this, once you see City on Fire, you realize that Tarantino took that idea and went to 200 with it, because City on Fire is kind of fucking boring.
I like it. I like it, but this has a lot more energy and it has a lot more individuality.
Do that. Yeah. And I love how quiet it is the first 5 minutes when you get to know these guys before the sheet hits the fan.
Yeah.
Oh, and look who tells on Mr. Blue for not tipping.
Yeah.
Who told on him?
Tim Roth.
And what role is he in this movie? A undercover cop.
You're giving it up. You're giving up too much.
No, anyone who hasn't seen this yet, who is watching this with us, they've probably seen the damn thing about I don't know how many times.
I'm looking at a number.
Oh, and here's one of the understated actors of this movie right here.
Okay.
The DJ.
Oh. Oh, yeah, Stephen Wright.
Yeah. And this is where 90s cool came from in the gangster films. Just
oh, hell
this
yeah.
Scene right here. Little green bag.
And of course, his soundtracks are just great.
I know, that's one of the things that really attracted me to Tarantino in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The great dialogue and the freaking music.
Oh, yeah.
And sadly, of all of his films, this is pretty much the most forgotten.
I think it's also one of the ones that people are really big fans of his love, though.
Yeah, but look what come after it. You had that 1-2 mm-hmm. punch of Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown.
Yep.
And I love it. You're like all quiet. You're expecting a cool. You're like, yes, this is going to be a cool caper film. And then.
Mm-hmm. yep.
You cut to. After the credits, you cut to. Yeah. Jim Ross bleeding to death, and the shit has basically gone so far south that even the devil is looking down on him. I'm sorry, Carl, but that just Keitel's speech reminds me of you and any of your friends who's in the hospital dying, and you taking to him, talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Opinion. Listen to the news. And how daring was this back then, Carl, to have a heist film where you don't see the heist?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, even in Monty Hellman's The Shooting, what don't we see in The Shooting?
The Shooting?
Yeah.
You don't think Hellman didn't have something to do with that? You're crazy.
And like the film we tried to watch, I Do Pino's The Hitchhiker, this is where the rest of the goddamn movie, except for the flashback, take place here.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be no damn tough guy. Someone shot me in the gut, I'd be Tim Roth.
Yeah.
No, if you got shot in the gut, I'd be bullshitting you like that. You have to, don't you?
Yeah.
And we will point out little references to the Tarantino burst in this movie. You're going to bang a fucking hole in the floor. You don't want to hurt the fucking floor, do you? And I love that the movie don't stop because those two characters are here. Shit is right. Going on outside the warehouse at the same time they're in. Those two are in the warehouse.
Right.
And isn't it sad that really, if you look, you know, I always say in a noir, there's a poor bastard character.
Yep.
And this one, I would say it's Harvey Keitel.
Well, no, I would disagree with that. I think they're setting it up that Tim Roth is the poor bastard. Because he's not.
Yeah, but
you don't know what's happening yet. We're all assuming
that everyone has seen this, right? But if you're watching this the first time, Keitel is not a poor bastard. He's the one trying to hold it all together. He's the one
up until the end, up until the middle of the movie, you're feeling bad for him. And then when everything comes out, you realize Keitel is truly the poor bastard of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he used this time getting shot in the gut to get his real name.
No.
Would you want me to do that if you ever got shot and we were in a situation just to throw your ass out in the front of the hospital and bam, 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 bam?
Yeah. You're going to get into jail, and I'm the one that got shot. Yeah, that's exactly what I would want you to do.
Well, I would rather you alive. Lying motherfucker.
You're going to be fine. Along with the kneecap, the gut is the most painful area a guy can get shot in. Shit. But it takes a long time to die from it. I'm talking days. You're going to wish you were dead. But it takes days to die from your wound. Time is on your side.
Do you consider that a helpful or I don't want to fucking hear this?
How'd he die? Top shot. So
fucking bad.
Is it bad?
Carl, this is so bad. This is so bad. Is it bad, Carl?
It's bad.
Yeah. Didn't you really look for him after this movie, you know, in roles and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Buscemi, are you kidding? Of course.
Yeah.
Same with Roth, too. You know, Roth wasn't that well-known at this point.
There were 1 minute, there was these blue boys out there, following exactly what the fuck they were doing. They were all just there.
It's only 4 years previous that he had his screen debut in a little-known musical film directed by Ray Davies, and I'm talking to him off here.
Yeah. And don't forget, this movie was the start of Harvey Keitel's second golden period.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he starred in a little film back in the 70s called Mean Street.
Yep.
And I love this, that the camera doesn't follow them into the room.
No.
This was just so unique. They already left, and instead of going to the action, they... It's like the camera's debating getting the fuck out of there. Wouldn't you say?
Are you cool?
Are you cool, Carl?
Yeah, I'm cool.
Actually, the little screw-ups that we've had through the years, including this one tonight,
yep.
I've learned to be that kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to mention, notice the gowns on the wall.
Yeah.
You might want to think about that.
in a little bit.
Yeah.
Nice little bit of foreshadowing that you don't even realize.
And this is Chesterfield. Red Apple hasn't entered the picture yet.
Nope.
Chester, did your dad smoke? Was in that era, Chesterfields?
No, my dad didn't smoke at all.
I'm just talking about in that era. I keep forgetting. Were they 50s, 40s, or 60s?
50s, 60s, 70s. Chesterfields were still around the 70s. I had a teacher that smoked those. I was just talking to Rachel about that yesterday.
Yeah.
Those and Perrington's, too.
Okay. Cops did not show up at the alarm at all. The cops didn't show up and let them want to shoot everybody. As soon as I heard the alarm, I saw the cops. I'm telling you, it wasn't that stupid, okay? They didn't let their presence be known. It wasn't Mr. Blonde, they can imagine, right? I'm not saying they weren't there.
This speech is a hell of a lot of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
He's like the smartest one in the fucking room.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, this scene coming up here. What scene is this a love note and a nod to, Carl?
Not sure.
A, B, C, D, A, F, G, L, M, N, O, P.
I'm not getting it.
What's after P?
Q. No, it's not Q. No, it's
not. No, it's a tribute to the... See, he gets hit by the car and stuff. This is a tribute to the... Insane, bizarre chase scene between Michael Moriarty and the cops in Q.
Nah, I disagree.
Remember,
I don't see that at
all.
By
the car, and then the case. Except in that, the case goes under another car, and he leaves without the jewels. I said love note, not ripoff.
No, I know.
No civilians. No real people.
No real people.
I love that. Oh, look. Look at the bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Pink, white.
Yep.
And what's below, which color was under the sign of the rat, as in showing it's rat poison?
I didn't see.
Orange.
Right.
Choice to do in 10 years. Taking after a stupid motherfucker. Ain't no choice at all. But I ain't no madman either. What the fuck was Joe thinking? Seeing a guy like that. Well, for goddamn lucky he didn't have guts when he shut the place up. I came this close to taking his ass out myself. I mean, everybody panics. Everybody. You get tense. Human nature, you panic. I don't care what your name is. You can't help it. Fuck, man. You panic on the inside. In your head, you know? You give yourself a couple of seconds. You get a hold of the situation.
One of the things about this film I love is the dialogue. The dialogue is just tremendous.
No, they're not acting like criminals. They're acting like working men.
Yeah.
See, look. Rat below it.
Yeah, got it.
Mr. Blonde, Mr. Lucas, I ain't got the foggiest. Once I got out, I never looked back. What do you think?
Who I think. I mean, you know, the cops either caught him or killed him. Yeah, that was a fucking miracle. But even if they did get away, where the fuck are they?
Okay. Originally, this was a story from Pulp Fiction.
Right.
And Brett and the other guy that Jules and Benson visit were the ones that he got to he stashed the diamonds at.
Yep.
Sorry. Time to take poop medicine.
Okay.
I love it that now the mystery has really kicked into gear.
Right, who's that?
Oh, right. See, now you're using your fucking head. How many times have you heard that, Carl?
Squirt? No.
Where's the bathroom?
It's usually leak. I gotta take a leak.
What did he just say? Who is he talking about? I thought you were with Alabama. And who was Alabama?
No.
What other movie was Alabama in?
I have no idea.
True Romance.
I have never actually seen that movie all the way through.
Bad Carl.
What happened to my fellow Spivey? Did he always move you right? Which one? Yes. Susan. Yeah, call it. What for? Bad luck? Guess you can say that again. Two men in the dark. Daylight during business hours, dealing with the crowd. So that's the guy to deal with the crowd.
How many points?
Say around 20. Shooting pretty nice. They most usually just deal in boxing diamonds. On this particular day, they're getting a shipment of polished stones from Israel. They're like a weigh station, you know? They get picked up the next day and sent to Kamala.
No, they're not.
I love that. No, they're not. You notice in the scenes where it's not in the warehouse, the camera's not erratic?
No. Not at all.
What? What is it? Get the fucking shit out of me, man. I thought he was dead for sure.
without medical attention, he will die for sure. What are we going to do, man? We can't take him to a hospital. Without medical attention, the man might not live through the night. The bullet in his belly is my fault. Now, while that might not mean jack shit to you, it means a hell of a lot to me.
First things first, okay? Sandy is goofy. We got to hook up.
What do you suggest we do? From the hotel? We got a guy who's shot in his throat. Can't walk. He's like a stuck pig. When he's awake, he's in pain.
You got an idea? Spit it out.
Joe can help. We get in touch with Joe. Joe could get into a doctor. Could you get a doctor to come to see him?
Maybe you can trust Joe. How are we going to get in touch? Huh? He's supposed to be here, but he ain't. Which is making me very nervous about being here. Even if he is on the up and up. I don't think he's going to be too happy with us, okay? He planned a robbery. He's got a bloodbath on his hands now. He's got dead cops, dead robbers, dead civilians. Right,
I
send
him back
and
have
a lot of sympathy for our
plight.
I mean, if I was
him,
I'd try to put as much distance between me and this method humanly possible.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, I agree. That's Buscemi is the one that's got it. He understands the situation more than anything else.
Yeah,
Keitel has a Yes,
sentimental streak,
and that's and sentiment, and that holds him back.
Yeah. You told him what?
I told him where I was from a few days ago. It was just a natural conversation.
What was telling him your name when you weren't supposed to?
He asked. We had just gotten away from the cops. He just got shot. It was my fault he got shot. He's a fucking bloody mess. He's screaming. I swear to God, I thought he was going to die right then and there. I'm trying to comfort him. Telling him not to worry, everything's going to be okay, I'm going to take care of him. And he asked me what...
I love the look Buscemi's giving him.
I mean, the man was dying in my arms.
Not tell him your fucking name!
Nice.
What a patient I make
of you. Leave a sheet on you where you're from.
Yeah.
Well, that's that then, man. I mean, Jesus Christ, I was worried about most of the possibilities as it was. Now he knows, hey, see what you look like, see where you're from, and see what your specialty is. I'm not going to have to throw a hell of a picture for him to pick you out. I mean, that's it. Why you didn't tell him anything else, I can narrow down the selection.
If I was to tell you again to back off, then you wouldn't go round and round.
He ain't taking him to the hospital.
If he knows he's going to die.
I'm very sad about that, but some fellas are lucky and some ain't. What the fuck you touch me for, man? What the fuck with me?
Real good scene.
Yeah.
Fuck your wife. I didn't create the situation. I'm dealing with it.
I love that. Fuck you, White. I'm not creating this situation. I'm fucking dealing with it. And why? And who is this guy? What's his real name?
I know the actor. Michael Madsen.
His character name is Vic.
Mr. White.
No, that's Mr. Brown, but Vic Vega.
Ah, okay.
And who is he related to?
John Travolta, right?
Yeah. Vic went to prison for a good 10 to 20 years, and they sent Vincent over to Amsterdam to hide out. The biggest reason I chose this is because of its length. That's the only real complaint I got about Tarantino's work, as great as they are.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it just too damn, he makes his movies too damn
long.
Wrong. Don't you agree, Carl?
Yeah, though I will say this, Jackie Brown, I could take another 20 minutes of that. Love,
yeah.
That,
Harkle, the little doggy, are you going to bite? He's, you know, they, you know, from the way I talk, you'd think he would be the psychotic one.
Right.
He's the one who's running around beating the shit out of everybody, wanting to fight with everybody. Uh-oh.
Edward.
But then again, as I said, he grew up in the Heights. If you lived more than 3 weeks in the Heights, you're an honorary black person. Because if you was white in the Heights, you'd be dead, dead, dead.
Trying to figure out who the bad guy is, right? Wow. That's really exciting.
Especially a big Lee Marvin fan, actually. I bet you're a big Lee Marvin fan. I'd like to show you guys.
Oh, here we go.
Where? In my car. Would you forget your french fries? You go with the soda?
I have them already.
Yeah?
I got something I think you might want to see, though.
What? Fries.
I'm sure you'll like it. Come on.
I think it's the only time it leaves the warehouse. You just see the car, you see him exit. The camera doesn't even
leave. Yeah. That's the only,
well,
the only time you really see the outside that isn't the flashback.
Talk about a poor bastard.
He's a cop.
Yep.
You're a piece of work, my friend. Anything, I can just get him the fuck out of here. He's sick, but you relax. I know you a long time. I'm not worried. I know you're ready. Don't tell me what I already know. Don't embarrass me. So you had a few bad months. You do what everybody else does. I don't care if it's J.P. Morgan or Emmy the Taylor. You write it out. Sick babies.
God, is he so good in this. Everybody is just good. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Hey, welcome home, babe. How does freedom feel, huh? Changed. Ain't that to say it's true. Sit down. Take your car off. Make yourself at home. A little drink?
Yeah.
How about a little Remy Martin?
Sure.
Who's your barrel off? Senor Scagnetti.
What movie is that connected to?
Is that Jackie Brown?
Natural Born Killers.
Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, remember Senor Scagnetti?
Mm-hmm. I want you to know I appreciate all the packages you sent me on the inside. Hey, what the hell was I supposed to do? Get about you? I just want you to know that it meant a lot to me. Hey, it was the least I could do. Wish the hell I could have done a lot more. Back home.
Now, Michael Madsen, of course, is a huge repertory person of Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he die, Christopher Penn, before the 90s was out?
Yeah, he passed away a couple years ago, 3-4 years ago.
Imagine by the end of the 90s how much this cast would have cost.
Yeah,
well, in the mid-90s, how much this cast would have cost.
Oh, yeah.
Ask me how business was.
You know, talk about his dialogue, but you pick the characters, and it's very naturalistic. I know people
plus,
are concerned.
Just with this stuff, it really just shows their relationship without even trying. I love that, like a father chewing out his kids. And if you look back on one of our shows, I forget which one, was it the one with what's his name he directed From a Whisper to a Scream? Who took care of...
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and he told the story on why Tarantino and Lawrence never worked together again. Why can't we get jobs like that, Carl?
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, yeah, that'd be nice. We just show up, get the check, and then...
And if he decides to make a surprise visit, that's the day we sent you to custom. Pick up a load of shit and bring it back. You coming back again? Hey, sorry, Seymour. Just missed. We had to set up a tap desk. You're 5 fucking hours away.
We had a load of shit we had to have him pick up there and bring back here. Look, part of your job, Vic, is going to different places. That's the beauty of it. We got places all over the place.
Hey, Vic, they tell you not to worry. You'll get this worry.
I'll take you out a long week tomorrow. I'll get you fixed up with Matthews. I'll tell him what's going
on. You know, I really appreciate what you guys are doing, but I'd like to know when I can come back.
And do some real work.
Some real work.
Yeah.
Well, hard to say. Kind of a strange time now. Things are kind of...
They're a little fucked up. Look, we're just getting ready for a big meeting right now, thanks.
Look, just let Eddie Bernard set you up a mortgage. Get your job, get some cash, get this kid Eddie fuck off your back, and we'll talk to you, all right? Huh?
Ed. I got an idea. Just hear me out. I know you don't like using the voice on this job. But Vic here, I mean, he's only been nothing but good.
The boys, that makes me wonder if he's a made man.
How would you feel about pulling a job with about five other guys? I feel great about it.
All right.
Sounds of the 70s.
He continues. This is Austin Collar. Win two tickets to the Monster Truck Extravaganza. Fairgrounds.
Featuring Big Daddy Don Bodine's truck.
The behemoth.
12th caller wins on the station where the 70s survived.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, balloon. Did you see that? Did you see what color that balloon was that was trailing him?
Blue. Yep.
No, orange. You remember those big bricks? And I love this song, don't you? Which one do you like better, Carl? I gotcha. Or skinny legs and all.
Skinny legs and all.
Give it here.
I love this shit.
Yeah. I gotcha.
What do I tell you guys about that?
No shit, he's fucking pissed. He just knocked the crap out of him and then he goes, oh God.
Holy shit, Orange is dead. No, he's not dead. We will be if we don't get him taken care of. He was set up. The cops were there waiting for us. What? Nobody fucking set anybody up. The cops were there waiting for us. Man. Bullshit. Hey, fuck you, man. You weren't there. We were. And I'm telling you, the cops had that store staked out. Okay, Mr. Fucking detective. You're so fucking smart. Huh? Who did it?
What the hell do you think we're going to ask each other?
Yeah, what'd you come up with, huh? You think I did it? You think I fucking set you up? I don't know. But somebody did. You fucking assholes turned a jewelry store.
Don't you call me an asshole.
You fucking idiot. Turn a fucking jewelry store.
Don't you call me a fucking idiot.
You wonder why a fucking cop show up?
You know, it's this play like this and the Hateful Eight has a real connection.
Okay.
Both of them play more like plays.
Oh,
than
absolutely.
Movies.
Oh, absolutely. It could be done as a play, no question.
You ain't dying. He is.
Yeah, I mean, all you would need is a revolving stage with maybe two or three sets. The jeweler's store. The warehouse. And Cabot's office. What do you think, Carl? Would you need any more sets?
Not really.
Maybe he can tell us who the top set us up. If you fucking beat this prick long enough, until you start the goddamn Chicago Fire, now that don't necessarily make it fucking so!
That's true, right, Carl?
No, absolutely.
Okay? I stashed it to be sure this place wasn't a police station.
Good deal. Now let's go get it.
Ain't it funny he keeps saying that, but it is. The cops are there just waiting for him. They're waiting for, well, they're going to pay in 5 minutes, but yeah. They're waiting for Cabot to show up.
And if you think Joe's pissed off, that ain't nothing compared to how pissed off I am at him. Same room as that bastard. See what I was looking for, Betty? I fucking walked in here. I told these guys about staying put. Mr. White whipped out his gun, sticking it in my face, calling me a motherfucker, saying he's gonna blow me away. Blah, 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 blah.
Can you believe that, Carl? I walked in the room, and I mentioned said something wrong to you, and you pulled a gun in my face and called me a motherfucker. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, bam, 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 bam. I told them not to touch the fucking alarm. They did. If they hadn't done what I told them not to do, it'd still be alive.
Carl, if you hadn't have done what I told you not to do.
That's your excuse. Alarms, Mr. White. What does it matter who stays with the cop?
If you are a real film fan, look at the way dialogue is presented in film before Reservoir Dogs, 2 or 3 years, and after.
Yeah.
You'll find out that it really is a big change, wasn't it, Carl?
Well, Tarantino, with this movie, and particularly, of course, with his next film, just changed everything. I mean,
and Linklater,
you know,
with Slacker.
Right. Pulp Fiction, of course. Things
yeah.
To Do in Denver When You're Dead. You know,
Clerks.
3 Days in a Valley. I mean, so many Tarantino.
Yeah, there
were
so many rip-offs of Tarantino stuff, but
oh, yeah.
It was the ones that were independent that really brought back talking.
Mm-hmm.
I told you I don't know anything about any fucking setup. I've been on the force for only 2 months. They don't tell me anything. Nobody tells me shit. You can torture me all you want. Torture you? That's a good idea. Like that. Yeah.
Even your boss said there wasn't a setup.
I what?
Your boss.
Excuse me, pal. One thing I want to make clear to you. I don't have a boss. Nobody tells me what to do. You understand? You heard what I said, you son of a bitch?
Oh. Man, this is a tough scene. Imagine just playing so perfectly.
Well, that's what you would say if somebody called me your boss.
Yeah.
You'd do the exact same thing.
And boy, is this scene iconic.
What?
Would you like to have one of those radios, man? I'd love to have that radio.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to torture you anyway.
Regardless, I have to get information.
Just to fuck with you.
Using to mean torture. You can say anything you want, because I've heard it all before. All you can do is pray for a quick death.
Which you're not going to get.
Which you ain't going to get.
This scene right here almost got the movie a
NC-17
rating.
Yeah.
Straight raise a toad carrying son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Right, girl?
Yeah. And you're never going to hear this song again without thinking of this scene. It's
and
not gonna
on its first viewing at Sundance, a lot of the audience left during this scene.
Yep. That's very true.
And if you haven't done that dance at least once while screwing around, there's something wrong with you, right, Carl?
No. Oh, absolutely.
And then I'll get down the stairs. Oh, you're still laughing, giggling, and you know.
I am stuck in the middle with you.
Now we have your attention. The cold blood-sucking freak. Now we have the desired effect. I mean, you don't see shit, but you're just going,
ow, ow.
And then you see this.
Yeah.
And right up here, and maybe after a minute or so, was the moment that the worm turned.
Yeah.
Right, girl?
Right.
There's only one bad thing about showing this outside scene like this.
Okay.
And you know what that is?
What?
Where in the name of your skinny bony ass would the cops be hiding?
Good question. Behind the wall.
Oh, there we go. And I love, oh, we forget to mention one thing. I love how in this in Pulp Fiction, well, and Jackie Brown, whenever there's music on the soundtrack, there's a source where it comes from.
Yeah.
Because I love that. He went out there and then all of a sudden the music ends.
How would you like to be the actor in this chair, man? I mean, seriously, you're an actor. And this shit is happening to you. Now, granted, that's water. But goddamn.
Stop.
What's
the
matter?
Don't do this. Please.
Does it burn a little bit?
Stop.
Fucking idiot, gonna blow up the goddamn, the whole goddamn place. I know about fumes. How come it's not our... And boom, the worm turns. That's why Tarantino and the guy who wrote the script with him, Lawrence, I forget his name,
It's Lawrence Bender, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Lawrence Bender made Tim Roth be so screwed up through the first two quarters of the film so that when this happens, it would be the person you least expect because, well, why would he be, you know, like, what's his name said? He can't be the rat. He got shot in the gut. He took a bullet for me.
Yeah.
I love this. Oh,
shit.
What is it with Tarantino fucking up Marvin's in his first two films?
I have no idea.
Listen to me, Marvin. Listen to me, Marvin Nash. I'm a cop.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I can remember the first time I seen it when he revealed himself to be a cop. I was like, you motherfucking rat. What did you think about the twist when it first hit you?
I thought it was a great twist.
Yeah.
By the way, did you notice his last name? Neuendijk.
What?
No Dyke. Neuendijk. It's his last name.
Yeah.
It's Ross' last name.
Yeah.
Ready. Ready. Ready.
Ready, no die.
How do
it look? Like someone got off your fucking ear. I love this.
This cop swept me the block away.
What the fuck are they waiting for? This fucking guy slashes my face and he cuts my fucking ear off. I'm fucking deformed. Fuck you! Fuck you! I'm fucking dying! I'm fucking dying!
That's gonna be us in the nursing home, ain't it, Carl?
Yep.
Oh, God, Steve, my knees are bad today. Fuck you, I'm dying here. How many other directors do you know that would wait to almost really the last act to reveal this?
There's a couple. But not many. Now, here you go. This is...
And really, wasn't this one of the starts of the 90s noir boom?
By the way, is that the same diner that's in Pulp Fiction? I'll bet you it is.
Oh, yeah, it is.
My daddy tells me Joe wants to meet me. He says I should just hang up and make a phone call.
I mean, there was a couple before this, after dark, my sweet.
Yeah.
That little one out of Texas, which the filmmakers just made that film and just didn't do anything else. Right, Carl?
Yep.
Blood Simple is what I'm saying.
Yep.
Miller's Crossing.
No, he ain't familiar.
The Grifters. And one of me and Carl's favorites, but also most underrated of the 90s. Right, Carl?
Oh, yeah. Deep cover.
John Dahl.
Oh, John Dahl. You're thinking that. Okay, never mind.
I mean, really, you will see Miller's Crossing on some noir list, but will you see Red Rock West or The Last Seduction on?
Only on ours.
Yeah.
Nice guy called to check it out and said, say, okay. So it was a good piece. I didn't rattle. It was ready like a movie. Do right by him. He's a good guy.
Hey, like that. He's wearing a communist hat.
Yep.
Not your fucking legal. He's like a fucking scumbag. He's selling out his illegals. That's what kind of a nice guy he fucking is, all right? I'll take care of this fucking ass, man. But you get that low-life scumbag out of mind and you take care of business, you hear me?
Doesn't this remind you of the 70s so much that the ones you depend on are saying, don't trust him, he's a fucking scumbag. This whole bit, Carl, I would just have him get up from the stage and then just act it like invisible furniture and stuff were around.
Right.
An amusing anecdote about a drug deal. Wait. Something funny that happened to you while you're doing a fucking job, man. Damn. I gotta memorize all this. There's over four fucking pictures of shit. Just think about it like it's a joke, all right? You memorize what's important, the rest you make your own, all right? You can tell a joke, can't you? No?
Is that true, Carl?
Yeah, more or less.
Now, the things you gotta remember.
No, the setup, and then you've got the punchline, and what happens in the middle is your own.
In a men's room.
Except for the, what is that one, the world's dirtiest joke?
The aristocrat.
That one, you gotta remember the setup and the punchline, and what comes in between there is your own.
Yours. That's what I just said. That's what a joke is.
No, you said the punchline is all yours.
You gotta do all them details, man, and make it your own. While you're doing that,
what I'm saying is,
I forgot about
the aristocrats, the middle is your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's what I said. The middle is your own.
Look on the balls.
Silver Surfer.
Kamikaze Cowboy. Silver Surfer.
Yep.
Ooh, donuts. You think it's a cop joke?
Something like that, yeah.
Hey, Freddy. Hey, dude. Getting some? Get some for me too, like they knew I still smoked, so they asked me to buy some for them when I was buying for me. But it got to be $2.50.
Got to be every time I smoke the weed, there's about 4 or 5 them people, because those motherfuckers come up like motherfucking leeches hanging on my ass like a hemorrhoid.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Calm down the phone. Now I'm fucking
tired.
I couldn't even rent a fucking
tape
with that 6 fucking phone calls interrupted.
Hey, that would be my part. I'll add to it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't even fucking rent a movie.
I got my shit laid out in $60 bags. They don't want $60. They want $10. Break that's a major fucking pain in the ass. I don't even know what $10 worth looks like. This is a very weird situation. Because I can remember back in 1986, there was a major fucking drought. Nobody had anything. People were living on resin, smoking the wood in their pipes for months. This chick had a bunch. And she's begging me to sell. So I told her I wasn't going to build apartment anymore, but I would take a little bit to sell it to my close friends. She agreed to that, said to keep the same arrangement before, 10% free pot for me, as long as I helped her out that weekend. She had a brick of weed she was selling. She didn't want to be able to buy alone. Her brother usually goes with her, but he's in county unexpectedly. What for? His traffic tickets on a warrant. They stopped or something, found warrants on him to the county. Now, she doesn't want to walk around alone with all that weed. I don't want to do
it. I just love the way he tells this, don't you?
No, no.
Wait a minute. You go to the train station to pay the buyer to weed on you?
Yeah, the guy needed the right way. Don't ask me why. Anyway, we get to the train station, and we're waiting for the guy. Now I'm carrying the weed around in one of those carry-on bags. I gotta take a piss. So I tell him, I'll be right back. I'm going to the boys' room.
Okay, boys and girls, we're going to go in overtime in 7 minutes. But as they say here in a little bit,
sure.
You either just shit in your hands and carry it, or just leave. And we just decided to shit in our hands, didn't we, Carl?
No.
I love this. You know, the cops are just like frozen.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, got my gun drawn, right? I got to point it right at this guy. I tell him, don't fucking move. And this little idiot is looking right at me, nodding his head, yeah, and he's saying, I know. But meanwhile, his right hand is creeping towards his elbow. And I scream at him. I go, asshole, I'm going to fucking blow you away right now. Put your hands on the desk. And he's still looking at me, nodding his head, I know, buddy.
They like had a story within a story.
Mm-hmm.
You'll put your hands on the fucking dash. And then this guy's girlfriend, this real sexy oriental bitch, you know, she starts screaming at him, Josh, what are you doing? Listen to the officer and put your hands on the dash. So, you know, then like nothing. The guy steps out of it and casually puts his hands on the dash. What was he going for? This fucking racist. You're kidding.
No,
man. Stupid fucking citizen doesn't know how close he came to getting blown.
See, they used the same word. Oh, and guess what? That's a jet airplane.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The crooks call them civilians. And they call them citizens. Fuck you.
You know how to handle that situation. Shit your pants and dive in and swim.
And that's what we're doing here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Carl?
Yep.
I never knew you had a pretty good backstroke, Carl.
Funny guy.
Was you ever in the Olympics?
Remember the Fantastic Four?
Nope.
Yeah, with that invisible bitch and
flame
on.
Invisible bitch and flame on and shit.
Motherfucker.
It's just like the thing.
Be right down.
This was the only really original song recorded for this. Happy, you fool for love. One for love. I pretty much got this song memorized because there isn't a Quentin Tarantino soundtrack that I didn't burn out.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, except for the last song in this movie, but that's because it was sung by an overrated hack, but we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've all done that before. Except I would like dig through there and looking for the silver, looking for the quarters to make sure we have money for the phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Seattle now. I don't know shit. I'm not gonna get hurt.
Hey, Proof Brute!
Yeah.
That was the worst of the monster cereals.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. I swear. A guy has to have rocks in his head the size of Gibraltar to work undercover.
You want one of these?
Yeah, give me the bear claw.
Ooga chaka.
Ooga, ooga, ooga chaka. Feeling. Deep inside of me, oh, you got me.
Oh.
How many times when we're together, Colin, just hanging out at the cons, we talk about pointless shit like this?
Oh, absolutely.
I would change that from the N-word to
Latin Mexicans. Because
uh-huh.
I've seen this publicly. Big ass Mexican. I mean, this guy had muscles on muscle. You know, he's like, I'll kill you, mother. And they're, you know, the kind of guy you'd be terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, his wife steps out. What are you doing still standing out here? Get your fucking ass back in the house, mother. And then you've seen this big, giant, tough guy, gangbanger. Go. I'm sorry, babe.
Oh, Chris, okay, that's one thing we don't really talk about in this commentary, but his references to TV shows and everything is just wondrous.
Pam Grier did the film.
Pam Grier
TV show without Pam Grier.
Yeah, that's true. Christy Love. Who played Christy Love?
Was it Vanessa?
That was pretty
well.
Francis is white.
Shut up.
Hold on. I could probably find out.
No, I got it. I'm already up.
And
I said,
Carlos, where's Lady
E?
And now, apparently, Lady E is married to a real piece of dog.
I'm
going to
show.
You beat her up. I don't know what he did. Stupid, right? So anyway,
Teresa Davis.
Okay.
What?
Teresa. I was thinking it was Vanessa, but it was Teresa.
Teresa Davis. And I'm not saying this as a fact, but maybe this person that I've known for a long time had this doctor who was cheating on his wife, and that exact story happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
Five guys sitting in a hole in San Quentin, wondering how the fuck they got there.
I'm sorry, guys, but y'all ain't going to out-tough Eddie Bunker.
Yeah.
Finally, someone comes up with the idea. Wait a minute. While we were planning this caper, all we did was sit around and tell fucking jokes. Got the message? Let me holler at you.
I've seen podcasts like that too, and not ours. Well, some of our older ones.
Yeah,
we did make crap.
Right now, it's a matter of business. With the exception of Eddie and myself, we already know we're going to be using aliases on this job. Under no circumstances do I want any one of you to relate to each other by your Christian names. And I don't want any talk about yourself personally. That includes where you've been, your wife's name, where you might have done time, or a bank if you arrived in St. Petersburg.
God, that's for similar cool or what?
Yeah. That should do it. Hey, your names. Mr. Brown. Mr.
White.
Mr. Bond.
Mr. Orange. Mr. Pink.
Why am I Mr. Pink? Because you're a faggot, all right? No way. Right at once, it doesn't work. You get four guys, four fights, so who's going to be Mr. Black? They don't know each other, so nobody wants to back down. No way. I
That's true. Pink.
Yeah, but Mr. Brown,
Mr. Pink sounds like Mr. Pussy. How about if I'm Mr. Purple? That sounds good to me. I'll probably be Mr. Purple. You're not Mr. Purple. Some guy in some other job is Mr. Purple. You're Mr. Pink. Who cares what your name is?
Yeah, it's easy for you to say. You're Mr. White. You have a cool sounding name. All right, look, if it's no big deal to be Mr. Pink, you want to trade?
Hey, nobody's trading with anybody. It's at a goddamn fucking city council meeting, you know.
This is a good little...
There's two ways you can go on this job. My way or the highway. Now, what you going to be, Mr. Pink?
I have never said that to Carl before when it comes to planning a show. Have I, Carl?
No, you are the most generous, wonderful man in the world.
You guys are going to hardly talk.
Believe me.
Okay. Give him the cheese that we had hidden.
Guard the door. I don't let anybody go in or go out. Mr. Brown. Brown was in the car. He wasn't in the signal and pulled up.
I love the way their conversation in here. They talk all of this serious gangster talk, and then... Well, that too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can take the manager in the back and they can give you the dime. We're there for those stones, period. Since no display cases are being fucked with, no alarm should go off.
No.
We're out of there in 2 minutes, not 1 second longer. What happens if the manager won't give you the dime?
When you're dealing with a store like this, they're insured up the ass. They're not supposed to give you any resistance whatsoever. If you get a customer or an employee who thinks he's Charles Bronson, take the butt of your gun and smash their nose with it. Drops him right to the floor. Everyone jumps. He falls down screaming, blood squirts out of his nose. Freaks everybody out. Nobody says fucking shit after that. You might get some bitch talk shit to you. If you ever look like you're going to smash her in the face next, watch her shut the fuck up.
manager, that's a different story. The manager's no better than to fuck around. So if you get one that's giving you static, he probably thinks he's a real cowboy, so you got to break that son of a bitch in two. If you want to know something he won't tell you, cut off one of his fingers.
The little one.
And tell him his time's next.
Ow.
No.
Sorry, after breaking my pinky back in November, that just gives me pain. And I love that how it, the whole scene ends.
I'm hungry. Let's get the taco.
Yeah. And that's supposed to be another unanswerable question. What happens to Mr. Brown?
Uh-huh.
Because there's no bullet holes in that freaking window. You know. And the two gun things he takes from John Woo.
Mm-hmm.
This is a John Woo shot right here.
Yeah, that's a John Woo shot.
Back when John Woo was good. Fuck him. His good guy status.
Yep.
Hey, like that, just adding like two or three words in one shot will change the way a whole scene plays out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna die, I know it.
And here we are at Act 3.
What? I didn't hear you.
I said, Lowe and Tracy slashed the cop's face. Mm-hmm. How was going to burn him alive?
This cop? You went crazy? Something like that? Worse or better?
Katie, he was pulling a burn, man. He was going to kill the cop and me. When you guys watched through the door, he was going to blow the hell and make out for the diamonds.
I already tell you, that sick piece of shit with a stone cold psycho.
You ask the cop.
Look at Smooth Jamie's face. Wouldn't you say this is one of the best films that premiered direct to VHS out of the whole 90s direct to VHS scene? Or would you say it's the best to direct to VHS movie?
Certainly top 5, top 10. Easy.
Joe just got released from prison. He got cut out of custody warehouse full of hot items. He could have fucking walked. All he had to do was say my dad's name, but he didn't. He kept his fucking mouth shut. And he did his fucking time, and he did it like a man. He did 4 years for us. So, Mr. Arledge, you're telling me that this very good friend of mine did 4 years for my father. 4 years never made a deal, no matter what they dangled in front of him. You're telling me that...
I love his way he does his speech here. And friends free.
Mm-hmm.
And we're making good. Out of the fucking blue!
What the hell for? It'd just be more bullshit. This man set us up. Dad, I'm sorry, but I don't know what the hell's happened. What the fuck are you talking about? I'm a lump of shit working with the LAPD. Fucking idea. What you're talking about? Joe, I don't know what you think you know, but you're wrong. Like hell I am. Joe, trust me on this. You've made a mistake.
See, right here we're really getting into he's the poor bastard. Or would you
yeah.
just say dumb bastard?
The wrong tree.
Poor or dumb, what do you say? Put a quarter.
Poor bastard.
I do. The cocksucker tipped off the cops, and I missed a plan of Mr. Bunkill.
Dead is Dillinger.
Dead is Dillinger. Great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
That's your proof? You don't need proof when you have instinct. I ignored it before, but no more. You lost your fucking mind,
Joe. You're making a terrible mistake. I'm not going to let you make it.
Come on, guys. Nobody wants this. We're supposed to be fucking professionals.
Hey, look. Quite a long time. On jobs. No need for this, man. Just what I've done is done. I'm going to settle this in fucking conversation.
Joe, you'll let me and you die next.
Larry, we have been friends, and you respect my dad, and I respect you, but I will put fucking bullets right through your heart, and you put that fucking gun down now.
God damn you, Joe. You made me do this.
And there's the biggest joke screw-up that they did.
Yep.
Who shot nice guy Eddie? Because if you notice, there were four shots fired.
Mm-hmm.
He shot Cabot. Cabot shot. He shot him. Then
mm-hmm.
who shot him?
Tim Ross.
No, remember he's out of bullets.
Oh, okay.
That was a screw up, a literal one. And Tarantino just said, screw it. Which led to a Sundance t-shirt that's one of the bigger Tarantino collectibles out there to get an original one. Which is a t-shirt that read, who shot nice guy Eddie? In case you wonder what happened to Mr. Blue, did you just hear that outside? It sound like dull thuds.
Nope.
Yeah. I wonder if there's any gay undertones between him and Orange.
I'm wondering.
Oh. No one could do a heartbreaking sob that went better than
Keitel.
And upcoming in a minute is the worst part of this movie. And yes, I know you're flipping me off over there, aren't you, Carl?
Yeah, really.
Drop the fucking gun, buddy! No! Put the gun down! Don't do it!
Drop the gun, man!
Don't drop the gun! Drop the fucking gun!
We're gonna fucking blow you away!
Now here's a serious question. After all that extreme violence in the third act, why does this song work so perfectly over the credits? Would you say this is supposed to be the come down?
Well, I think it's, you know, I'm a huge Harry Nilsson fan. I love the song. But it works.
Well, I like it too. I was just messing with you. But wouldn't you say this song is the come down after you've just seen all this and you're just, and then you have.
Yeah. The calming influence of this little stupid song that we will know. It's a
with metal music,
drank a
you know.
Yeah.
Say, doctor. I've always said that this one has aged the worst out of his films, but coming back and watching this, it's actually aged pretty goddamn good.
I agree. And you gotta give it to our to Tarantino and to Monty Hellman too for backing this project.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who really got this together for Quentin.
Mr. White, Larry, Mr. Orange, Freddy, Mr. Blonde, Vic, Nice Guy, Eddie, Mr. Pink. See, they don't even reveal his name.
Mm-hmm.
And another big question is what happened to Mr. Blue?
That's true.
Roger Avery.
Nope.
Oh, and guess what? Harry Nilsson gave him his song for free. And look right there,
yep.
Below Sundance Institute. Who was that?
Well, don't forget Terry Gilliam and Ulu Grossbart is part of this, too.
Right.
Great.
He
okay,
got
so
most of this song for
story.
Nothing because the artist loved it so much.
Mm-hmm. Joe Tex.
Bruce
Rogers,
Swade.
Bruce Swade.
Harry
and
Nilsson.
Of course, Harry Nilsson.
Bedlam. Magic Carpet Ride, performed by Bedlam. Western Country. Country's Cool. It's Country.
Yeah.
I mean, after this movie came out on VHS, people were buying this soundtrack left and right.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it gave Harry Nilsson a second life.
It certainly didn't hurt. He was still alive at this point. Harry was still alive. He died, I think, in 94, 95.
Remember, it said thank you to Harry Nilsson. Why would he tell thank you to someone who's
dead?
And the difference between this and the normal one, it used to say Reservoir Dogs, a live entertainment direct to VHS debut.
Mhm. Well, good stuff.
Yeah, but like they said, if you shit your pants, you swim with it. Because of the commercials, we had to shit our pants. But at least we didn't stray that far.
Mm-hmm.
Noir. We kept it noir.
And let's face it, I have some really good toilet paper that helped. So there.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
We didn't even panic. Just, fuck.
No.
You just, Carl texted me, said, fuck this, fucking commercials. And I was like, okay, fuck it. Do-do-do-do-do. Okay, rid of our dogs. Why not? And then I seen the one thing that made me want to do it.
I mean, seriously, we did that for less than a half hour on The Hitchhiker. Fucking commercials.
Yeah.
And the seventh one was on the way.
And like I said, the reason I picked Reservoir Dogs basically was that it was the S word.
Yep.
Short. This may be Tarantino's shortest movie.
It is, by far. By far.
And to make Reservoir Dogs, he
except
sold
for
off
words.
The... What?
Well, four words.
Anthologies don't count. But to make this script, part of getting the money together, he went and sold scripts for Natural Born Killers and True Romance.
Right.
And KMB... Kurtzman wanted to make his own film, so he hired Tarantino to write it. And as a thank you for that, they did all the FX in Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs for material costs.
Right.
And what was the film that he wrote for Robert Kurtzman? From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, okay, that's right.
And because he was Reservoir Dogs success, he was writing the script at Columbia Films for Pulp Fiction. And there was this Mexican guy in his office next door who was... writing a script as a follow-up to his movie El Mariachi. And that's how he met Robert Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Isn't it weird when you go to the early 90s and all the film directors and stuff in the independent scene, you can do that connection like it used to be called 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. You can probably find a way to connect almost every one of them.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Okay, now here's usually the hardest part of our show because I usually have to drag it out of him with a pickup truck. Hopefully he's got his brain with him tonight. And what's coming up on the Deviant Legion?
So what we have going is tomorrow, which is Thursday at 8 p.m., we're going to have Chelsea LeBeau and also Charles D. Lincoln. They are they're an actor and director. They've worked together. Charles has directed a number of films and a web series. And they're going to be on with us, and we're going to be talking podcasts because they do podcasts. Charles also has a connection with somebody else. I'm not really at liberty to say, but hopefully this is a precursor to another show we'll do with Charles to talk about his father's legacy. So,
and his father was one of the best cameramen / directors in his chosen field.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And producer, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's tomorrow, and I'm very, very help for that. And then on Sunday,
we're
going to be no, Adam doesn't have anything set for Friday. But on Sunday,
hold on for a second. Okay. I passed out for shock in 10 seconds.
Okay. I know. It's kind of scary, isn't it? So Sunday, to continue Women's Month on Deviant Legion, I'll be doing a music show, Rock This Town Radio, in honor of TC, of course. And we're going to be doing girl groups of the 50s and 60s. And you're going to hear a lot of them, and a lot of them are...
I got something you could add to that, Carl.
Girl groups
of the 50s and 60s, EBS.
EBS, okay.
Everything but... You told me what band you wasn't going to put on there.
Oh, but Supremes. But the Supremes.
Yeah, EBS, everything but the Supremes.
The reason for that, I want to focus on some of the lesser-known ones that put out really great music, and even the better-known ones, I'm not going to do their hit songs. So you're going to listen to a lot of music that may be unfamiliar with you, but you should know the groups because they all have hits. So there you go. That's what we're planning to do on Sunday. So what do you got coming up, Stephen?
Nothing now, but I'll pull something out of my hat. But if you want to listen to it, go in the Blog Talk archives, or if you're on, let me get my phone out so I can look.
Pardon me, I still have a little bit of time.
Look it up, Steve's Video Store, and you will see yesterday we also had Vicky Love doing, like I said, about 1 hour and 14 minutes on Dune 2, 10 minutes on Spaceman, and the first 10 minutes is me and the great one, Tracy Johnson, trying to deal with the fact that Vicky's phone was being interesting.
True. That happens with Blog Talk every so often.
No, it was her phone.
Oh, was her phone not Blog Talk? I'm impressed.
Yeah. Well, look, we didn't get no trouble from Blog Talk tonight.
No, we didn't. But there was a time, boy, I was not happy with them. Let's just say that. Anyway, thanks for having me on, Stephen. I'm glad. As always, when something happens, we're able to shift, and you do that really well, man. So it's been a good show, man.
It's... this puzzle is our... best shift ever because we did it quietly.
Exactly.
Yep. We was a Mr. White. We was a Mr. Blue tonight. And not a Mr. White.
Yep.
And
I'm getting tired here. So I'm
as usual,
as usual,
we say right now, thank you for being on. Good night, Carl.
Good night, Stephen. Good night, John Boy.
Good night, sweetheart. When it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. When it's time to go. I really must say, oh, good night, sweetheart, good night. Good night.